Hey, we've been warning that Ishtar is alive and well in American culture today, and part of her magic or part of her sorcery is the blending of the sexes. Last week's podcast, we talked about her effect on the masculinization of women. Today, we're talking about another massive problem in our culture today, which is the effeminacy of men. In fact, we're going to highlight something that just came out on Fox News to the very same issue, wondering why are men soft today, and what does it even mean to be a man? Well, all of this gender confusion is intentional. It's demonic. It's rooted in the destruction of the family and ultimately the destruction of the nation. And so Ishtar is alive and well. We're going to highlight the effeminacy of men today and her work in American culture. You will not want to miss this.
Hey, welcome to the Ron Johnson Discipleship Podcast.
We are thrilled that you guys are with us. Thanks so much. I've been getting a lot of good feedback, and a lot of you are shooting us texts or emails or talking to us on Sunday if you happen to worship at Living Stones. And we just love to hear from you guys. A lot of what we're talking about every week is stuff that is absolutely in our faces. It's as contemporary as can be. And boy, we have a lot to talk about today. Our universities are going nuts. We're seeing all kinds of upheaval, and really, it's as we were talking about. I was watching that what's going on at Columbia University. I don't know how some of these universities hope to stay open. I'm just thinking out loud here, because who wants to send their kid to a war zone where no education is really taking place, and where your life is hazarded, and where there's such open hate on display? And then what got me was, number one, how will we let this happen in the first place? I heard a podcast from Doug Wilson. He said, you know, if we really wanted to stop this, we would send a couple of fire trucks with some hoses, and we could have cleared the whole ground out. You know, it's not like there's inability to stop this from happening. There's really just a lack of will. But what got me was the entire faculty, I don't want to say entire faculty, but let's just say a large portion of the faculty were locked arm in arm in support of students who had just violently taken over the dean's building and were completely stopping the whole purpose for which these people are hired, which is to provide an education for the next generation, and a very expensive education at that. So I'm looking at, first of all, I'm like, why are these students acting like absolute idiots, like animals, spray painting the building, destroying the building? I mean, it's like childish behavior. In fact, one professor or one university president said, we're not here to babysit. This is not a daycare. And then I'm looking at the faculty going, oh, no wonder the students are acting this way, because the faculty are a bunch of idiots and the faculty are encouraging this. You know, I don't know why anybody in their right mind would, number one, send their kid to a school, and number two, even take a scholarship from that school. You literally would have to pay me a lot of money to even think about sending my child to one of those schools now. It's just a disgrace. But to the larger point of what we talk about on this podcast, this is the epic failure of secularism and the absence of truth, and trying to create these places where we sing kumbaya while we all accept each other's differing views. And what we're seeing is, that is an absolute lie. If you reject truth, you're going to embrace chaos and anarchy, and you're going to see what you're seeing right now on our major universities, you know?
Yeah, there's no neutral ground. When you accept everyone's truth, someone's truth is going to be more true than your truth.
Exactly. That was the old Animal Farm book,
yeah.
Right?
All animals are created equal, but some are more equal.
Some are more equal than others. No, but on one level, again, this is an epic failure of a godless worldview that is imploding. So we preach tolerance, and then we have a whole group of students, again, across the nation, that are openly hating others. In this case, it's Jewish people, anti-Semitism. So all of our tolerance and all of our virtue that we create, let's just love one another and, you know, blah, 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 that's imploding. And then it's like, I keep saying, where are the adults? Like, there's no adults. Why isn't this immediately stopped? Like, get off the lawn. You're not going to set up a camp here. You're not listening. Okay, then you're going to be arrested, or you're going to be kicked out of school. Or in some of these situations, these folks should be absolutely deported. If they're here illegally and they hate America and they hate Israel, get them out of our country. Put them on a plane and ship them back to wherever they think is the promised land and let them be in for a rude awakening. I mean, this is just ridiculous that we're tolerating this type of insanity. And like I keep saying, when are the adults going to show up? But here's the problem. They've been neutered. Their worldview gives them like zero moral authority to even make a moral decision. Like, is this behavior right or wrong? Like, they can't even draw a line between what is acceptable behavior in a free world, a constitutional republic, and what is criminal behavior, because that's what happens, again, when you reject God and you reject the scriptures and you reject absolute truth. So you have absolute mayhem. So, and one hand, I'm sitting back watching this dumpster fire, which is called secular public education, watching it all go up in smoke. We saw the university presidents who could not even come out and openly condemn what Hamas did to innocent people. Just horrific, barbaric behavior, and not even to be able to come out and say that's evil. Because what is evil? If you throw out God, right, what is evil? It's a social construct, I guess, to serve whoever is in power.
Yeah, whoever is the elitist, has the biggest microphone, gets to define what is evil.
Yeah. And so, anyway, it's just
scary
interesting.
Place to be. Yeah.
Is it going to be interesting to see, you know, as everything starts hitting the fan, and the Bible talks about everything that can be shaken will be shaken, right? Most people sitting back watching the evening news, especially in places like where we live, where this is not happening, you just look at that and go, wow, I wouldn't feel safe going near the campus, let alone letting my son or daughter go there for a, quote, education. This has got to take a tremendous hit, you know, on a campus. I'm also watching, this is interesting as well, when Christian universities go woke, they also majorly struggle with enrollment and other things, because if you're a Christian parent, why would you spend all that money to send your kid to a, quote, Christian university that's supposed to be different when it's just as woke as some of these state universities? It's like, wow, you know, go for a value. You can go for a fourth of the cost, send your kid off to a woke state university instead of a woke Christian university. So I think there's going to be economic ramifications for all of this. And it's going to be interesting to see what the landscape of higher education looks like.
It's interesting because, you know, America is not rocket science to see that America is becoming more divided. And if there's a division and two sides are coming more and more apart, you don't want to be in the middle.
Oh yeah.
Being in the middle, you're going to fall through the crack. And for people who are trying to like figure out and try to please both sides, man, it's going to be harder and harder and harder as we become more divided. And you want to know what side you're on and stick to that side.
I think this is why, you know, we have to be patient in terms of election cycles. And I'm not suggesting that an election changes everything, but it's why we do have elections. I'm watching right now, just read the headlines this morning. The residents of Chicago, which has been, you know, part of the famous, you know, Democratic machine, right? Haven't found a Republican in Chicago in I don't know how many years, right? But the bottom line is the residents of Chicago are fed up with all of the money that's going to support illegal immigrants that have been flooded into the city intentionally by the Biden administration, flown into the city, given all kinds of benefits, while the residents are being told basically suck it up and deal with a loss of services, a loss of police protection, an increase in violence. In other words, they just imported all this mayhem. And nobody seems to care about the American citizens or the residents of the city. And these people now are fed up, and they're saying, you know what? We're going to be taking your seat on the city council or whatever. So I think that, you know, like we've said before, lies have a very short shelf life. In other words, reality pushes back very strongly against a lie. And eventually people go, you know what? We're sick of this. You're supposed to be protecting us and helping us, and our tax dollars are supposed to go to running the city. not supporting some radical leftist agenda of open borders or whatever. And I think that's happening across the globe, which lets me know there's hope when people say, you know what, we're fed up with this. And it's close to our own backyard. I guess violence is continuing to increase, and crime and everything else. And I don't know, again, if you're a resident of a major urban area, you're like, we're just sick of this because we don't want to live this way. We're like prisoners in our own house.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm believing for good things there. But I've always said this: our podcast, because it deals with biblical worldview, and because the biblical worldview is so applicable to everything and speaks to everything, it means we're always relevant. And I'm looking here at the headline from 2 days ago on Fox News: "Soft Guy Era Trend Raises the Question on What Happened to Masculinity." Subtitle: "Some of these guys, all they want is a mom." All they want is a mom. They want somebody to take care of them. You know, we talked last week about the masculinization of our women. And we're pointing this back to Ishtar. So give everybody, if they're tuning in just today, the connection between this wonderful book that we're jumping off on, and maybe we can bring it up to speed, because last week we talked about why women are being masculinized.
Yeah, I mean, we've been going through how these gods from thousands of years ago have not been truly banished through the advent of Christ, because the vacuum we have created through secularism, especially in the Western world today, many of the powers of these gods have returned, and one of these gods is considered Ishtar,
yep.
And it's a she, and she is the goddess of manipulating, of sexuality, of changing, of switching gender, and yeah. and it's a very interesting mix that gives a coherent view of what's going on in our culture today, right? You start looking at what this goddess represents, you're like, okay, that makes a lot of sense, what's going on in the world today. Like, why are these agendas being pushed, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as we pointed out, these gods are not real gods. They're demonic.
Demons, right, yeah.
They're demonic principalities and powers, but it doesn't also mean that they're not real and they don't have real power. Right. The other thing that we saw, as you pointed out, these gods are not trendy new creations. They're actually reiterations of very ancient demonic principalities and powers, and Ishtar is one of them. But I was cracking up because you were talking about Ishtar's character. She's highly sexualized, but she's also this warrior woman, angry, violent, all that kind of stuff. And really, I'm laughing because I have seen the resurrection of Ishtar in at least a dozen Hollywood movies,
yeah.
where you have this highly sexualized and masculinized woman who's, taking out 15 guys, with punches and kicks.
She weighs 90 pounds, but she's throwing 300-pound guys around. And you're just like, movie magic right there.
And like I shared Sunday, where in the world have we ever seen an example of that? Well, the answer is nowhere, because of this thing called testosterone. God made males and females, and they're different. But I was talking to a guy Sunday, and he said, yeah, my wife was wanting to go out and see this movie, and he couldn't remember the name of it, but he said, I looked it up, and basically this woman is like destroying like groups of 15, 20 guys at a time. And he's like, no, I don't want to go watch that. There's no entertainment value in that. And I think it kind of highlights just the confusion. Like, number one, that's not that type of a woman is not appealing to a man. Like, nobody wants to say, oh yeah, I want to marry that woman. No, it's kind of like bizarre. Like, it kind of goes against the grain. Like, no, that's not a woman. There's nothing attractive about that. I mean, if I want to have her on my battlefield fighting next to me, although that's fake too, as we've seen, but there's just nothing. That's not how God made the genders. That's not the complementary nature of the gender. If a woman is acting that way, then the man is absolutely unnecessary. And I think that's the point.
Yeah. And I think what we're seeing is that this is religious in nature, and these worldview, these promotions, these ideas, because I mean, just even from, you mentioned Hollywood, just from the walls of the, you know, the failure, financial failures of all these different agendas they're pushing, but they're still pushing it. Why? Yep. It's because it's a religious in nature. There is a...
That's a really good point. So we've gone beyond, like, shareholders should be irate. Because if you invest, let's just take like Walt Disney World, which is lost in their movies.
Yeah.
Billions, right?
Billions, yeah.
If you're a shareholder, you should be like, what? You know, demand something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just lost me a lot of money. But you brought up a good point. This is not economic. This goes against even economic common sense. Like, if you want to make money, don't do this. But as you pointed out, there's like a, it's almost religious.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we're talking about these return of the gods, these principalities, these demonic figures. It's like they're all imitators of Christ. You know, we all to worship the Lord, we all to worship Christ. And what these demonic figure wants is they want their own due worship. And they do it more subtly. They do it through manipulations and whatever it is. And what they're doing is they're craving the worship of their ideology and who they are. Even though people might not even know they're worshiping, but those are the, that's their influence. And basically, what you worship, you become more like, yep. right? That's the principle. Yep. You worship Jesus, you become more like Jesus, right? Yep. You worship the Father in heaven, you become more like our Father in heaven.
Yep.
If you worship Ishtar through their influence and their worldviews and their perspective, you become more like them. And that's kind of what we're seeing in our culture. To me, that's a very coherent explanation of what's going on in our culture today.
Well, and what I like is the fact that eventually, truth and reality smacks you in the face.
Yeah.
So it's hard to be in the movie making business when all you're creating are politically correct, nonsensical, epic flops that end up losing a ton of money. Like, you can only be stupid like that for so long, and then you're no longer making stupid films because you went against economic realities, right? And those economic realities drove you out of business. And that's all we can hope for at the end of the day, is that if these folks are not smart enough to adjust and to repent and to realize that people don't want to see or hear what they're promoting, then market realities will smack them in the face, and eventually there'd be no money for that anyway. So may that happen quickly. Spare us from a lot of the nonsense that we're forced to watch in the name of woke entertainment these days. But last time we were together, we talked about the metamorphosis of women, the masculinizing of our women. Today we want to talk about the headline I just mentioned from Fox News, the soft guy era. Let's talk a little bit about the metamorphosis of men. We said that Ishtar's unique skill set was that she could, through her sorcery, cause women to want to be like men and cause men to want to be like women. And what Jonathan Cahn has been saying is basically, if we reject God, then these ancient demonic principalities are coming back in. And if Ishtar's back in America, then one of the signs would be that we're seeing men losing what it means to be a man. In fact, they're becoming more womanlike. So let's take a look at the some of the great points he brings out. He points out that there's a Hittite hymn, ancient hymn, to the goddess Ishtar, who describes her as the one who will grind away from men manliness. And that word in the original language refers to their potency, their masculinity, their heroic power. And it was all part of her merging and confusing gender. If one can remove masculinity from men, and one can destroy the distinction between men and women, then you can destroy marriage and family and ultimately society. And so there's really something bigger at stake here. If men don't know how to be men and women don't know how to be women, then they don't know how to relate together. Then there's no such thing as healthy marriages. There's no healthy families. And ultimately, you have the breakdown of an entire nation, destruction of a nation. And that is what Satan is about, is the destruction of nations. And so this is a strategy, I believe, behind what we're seeing today. And so let's talk about this. The first thing you have to do if you're going to cause men to be effeminate is you have to look at their masculinity and define it as something like toxic, which is a word we hear all the time. What's the strategy there? So here you got a guy, a traditional male man who, or let's talk about biblical masculinity, strong provider, all of those types of things. We have this move in our culture today to call all of that toxic. What's going on? What's going on there? And why is normal masculinity now targeted as toxic?
Yeah,
I don't want to say normal, but
yeah, and this is where I'm very confused because I'm not on the trendy terms and whatnot, you know, and I don't know what's the distinction of toxic masculinity. I know there is a aggressive side to a man, pride, arrogance, violence that is, you know, not savory. It's unsavory to people and whatnot. I don't know if that's considered right. toxic masculinity, but at the same time, there's parts of aggression of a man that brings strength, that takes responsibility right. when no one else will, then, that takes ownership when no one else will.
Fights in world wars and builds yeah. skyscrapers and all the things.
Takes risk, yeah. you know, protects your family. It's like, is that what you mean by toxic? Like, I don't know what that line is. I haven't done the
And just to jump in, we're gonna get into a lot of this in the series we're doing now called Men and Women in Christ, because we're gonna see what the data shows is that when a man is acting in accordance with biblical masculinity, it produces great things. When a man doesn't know Christ and he's just allowing his testosterone to run wild, you get what we now refer to as toxic masculinity, which is very selfish, aggressive, dominant, angry, all of those kinds of things. So there is a place for actually calling a certain brand of variety or of masculinity toxic, but you can't whitewash the whole thing. And so what we've done is we've just completely thrown out and attacked masculinity in general. And so we have this whole men-hating move, which we talked about last in our last podcast. But there is a biblical masculinity, and that's what the devil attacks, the strength of manhood. And her goal in this situation, Ishtar's goal, is to emasculate men of their potency and their heroic power, grind away, as it says here, from men their manliness. Here's another ancient prayer that spoke of her power to emasculate men and remove their ability, to, as you pointed out, to fight and to protect. She would take away their swords, bows, arrows, and daggers, and then put into their hand the distaff and the mirror. So this, again, is a picture of her taking away what was once identified as true masculinity, the ability to fight, to defend, to protect. So she takes away their weapons, and in their place, she puts a distaff, which was a agricultural, right, more centered around the home, providing for the home. And the second thing here was the mirror, which again was symbolic. Was a picture of
Venus, yeah.
You know, women, beauty, all of those types of things. And so that's Ishtar's stated goal, take the weapons out, put a mirror in your hand and let you be focused on really what was traditionally a feminine thing. So he mentions in the book, old authorities and new gods. We witness the relentless assault of male leadership, whether public life, popular life, popular culture, or the home. Men were increasingly portrayed as being either unable or unfit to lead, as either toxic oppressors or bumbling, overgrown children. And I found this study I wanted to add to our talk today. This was not in the book, but this was, I believe, from Nancy Piercy's book on toxic masculinity. A media researcher named Jim McNamara conducted an extensive content analysis of more than 2,000 mass media portrayals of men, including news, feature articles, talk shows, and so on. Here's what he found. This is pretty amazing. More than 75% of all media representations of men portrayed them as villains, aggressors, perverts, and philanderers. She writes, "We went from father knows best to father knows nothing." And so we see this massive assault, and this has been happening again in the media for years and in popular television, where every father figure on any sitcom or on any show is either viewed as an idiot, clueless, incompetent, or a pervert. You know, I mean, that's basically what you see. You don't see strong man. Like, you go back to Father Knows Best, or you go back to even Andy Griffith's show, where you had a strong masculine representation of a healthy father, nurturing children, being a man, doing what's right, gentle, kind, all those kind of things, virtuous, courageous. No more is that being depicted in, you know, our media today. Men have been confused who they are. They don't really know who they are, but they certainly aren't strong, aggressive leaders. They're certainly not servant leaders. So, you know, just this constant assault from our media. When masculinity itself is portrayed as the problem, the implication is that the solution to masculinity is emasculation. An article in the USA Today says this, at today's universities, masculinity is almost never discussed except in negative terms, usually with the word toxic attached. Ironically, even as women outperform men in college, virtually every campus has a women's study department directed at the deconstructing of male power. And so this is part of what we're seeing on these campuses today, is manhood being attacked, patriarchy being attacked, anything having to do with biblical masculinity thrown out the window. And almost all of these universities now have women's studies that's exactly the tenor of everything. Destroy the patriarchy and exalt feminine power. So again, that's what we're up against. This is interesting too. Today, there are four times as many scholarships designated for women as for men. And so the pendulum has swung to where now men are really struggling to figure out who they are, where they belong, what their role is even in relationships with the opposite sex. At the same time, we're funding all these programs that are out to destroy masculinity, and all of this money going to educate women who are faring far better right now than men in every measure in school. So we have a crisis. Talks here about the reprogramming of boys. Here's some of the data. Boys are falling behind in education. Boys are treated like defective girls. Males are choosing to lead less. Why should they lead? When they do lead, they get attacked or vilified. Male instinct to provide and protect is now channeled into video games. So we have a large population of our men who, instead of actually protecting women or standing up for what's right or being involved in police or armed services, they just play video games in their basement. So men living in virtual reality. This is interesting. The desire for marriage and family is now being channeled into porn. And so most men, again, why do I need to risk being married to the, superwoman that we see portrayed in the media that's actually kind of scary and intimidating? Why don't I just stay home, play video games, and watch porn in my parents' basement? And so a lot of men are just choosing not.
Especially if women are there they've been educated and trained to demasculate you.
Yeah.
To talk down to your.
Or you're unnecessary.
Masculinity. Yeah. Right. And that's their approach.
You're just, right. You know, why do I need to marry a woman if I can just look at women on TV from a safe distance from a porn site?
She's not going to rip into me for being a man and.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a safer place. Years of engaging in casual sex have left most men today self-centered and immature. And this is a strong quote from a feminist, Camille Paglia. She says this, and she's a feminist. When an educated culture routinely denigrates masculinity and manhood, then women will be perpetually stuck with boys who have no incentive to mature or to honor their commitments. That's a powerful statement. So here you got women who are really what they're looking for is a man in the fullest sense. They don't want to marry themselves. They're not looking for an effeminate man. They're looking for a man. But she says because the culture we've created attacks that version of manhood, all we have is a bunch of immature boys. And no woman wants to be married to an immature boy. That's the last thing she needs is another child to raise. And so you can see how this demonic principality attacks the very heart of what it takes in marriage. Two complementary people, male and female, who are meant to, you know, again, work together and flow together. But when the definition of who those people are is completely turned upside down, you have a recipe for great pain and confusion. That's where we're at today. So as marriage weakened, so did the family. men were portrayed as disposable. Ishtar, the goddess of sexuality, it was also the goddess of destruction, and so it should come as no surprise that we see broken marriages, broken fathers, broken mothers, broken children, and broken culture. And that's the legacy of what happens when you begin to attack that which God has created as male and female, and the union and the oneness that God wants in establishing and forming families, which is now under attack. So we have, I think I read years ago, the average age of marriage was about 22. Usually it was right after college or right after some type of preparation for a career. Families were formed. Nowadays, it's almost, I think, right around the age of 30 or late 20s. So men and women are just choosing either to opt out of marriage altogether, or they got a major concern about it, or they just cohabitate, or they do all kinds of things, but they're just not forming families. And that's, if you don't form families, you don't have a nation for very long. And that, again, is Satan's goal, to lie, to kill, to steal, and destroy. And that's exactly where we're at.
Yeah, and I think, you know, going back to that word toxic masculinity. See, for me, the issue is like these words are invented, right? Someone right. created them, probably someone in the Ivy League, created yeah. these terms. And then what they do is they're oversimplification of a nuanced situation,
yeah.
Very complex situations. And I think the problem is a young man is trying to emerge and assert his masculinity, all of a sudden he doesn't know if it's that toxic or is that what it's supposed to be? Is that what
so
he's
it's
called
just
to
uncertainty,
do?
Yep.
It's uncertainty, whereas there are elements of a man, like I said, to take responsibility, to be aggressive in the right way, to lead, to take ownership. Well, someone could deride him for toxic masculinity or whatever, and he's like, oh, okay, so that's not it. So you when you damage the whole brand without the nuance of actually that's good and that's bad. Yeah. Then we lose all of it, like you said, and then we're all worse because of that. Yeah. That's why it's so important for us, followers of the kingdom of God, to recognize like, no, we need to create our own term. Like, what is biblical? I mean, the series we're doing right now on Sunday service is amazing because we almost have to rechart the path of what is biblical right. masculinity to distinguish ourselves from those other terms culturally to say, no, young men, this is good. When you take response, when you take certain risk, not stupid risk, but risk to protect and to care and to go on a new venture, to try something new, that is good masculinity. That is something you should take.
That's good.
And we need to define that. Because the culture's not defining that.
We lose the language game all the time. We start actually using the language that the media and everybody else employs. And then when we use the language, we actually buy into their worldview, and then we lose the truth in the process. Well, we've run out of time, but I just want to make one big plug. I'm so excited. We on the 15th of this month for our public square meeting, we have a doctor in who literally during COVID saved hundreds of people's lives. This is an incredibly bright doctor trained at some of America's finest institutions who recognized what we're calling the great COVID con. He's going to be talking about the three biggest lies that were foisted upon the American people during the pandemic and how he saved lives. And it wasn't by going with the protocol. It wasn't by listening to all of these national, international health mm-hmm. organizations. It was by using common sense and the medical training that he received. But we have the pleasure of having him come and address, you know, kind of a COVID post-mortem. What do we learn from this? We were incredibly lied to on this. We're talking about the three biggest lies, but we could talk about 100 different ways we were lied to. And now we're seeing the fallout. And my concern is this all happened conveniently during a national election. Who knows what kind of, you know, pandemic is going to be released this time around leading up to the election. So anyway, I'm very, very excited to have him out. We're going to be interviewing him. He's going to be presenting that night. I think you're going to find it amazing, amazingly insightful and eye-opening. So that's on the 15th of May from 6 to 8. It's our Public Square Ministry, and I'll share more about that in our next week's podcast. So anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll look forward to seeing you next week.